The Israel Report with Rolene Marks.
Wow, Rolene Marks, I feel like I'm on a steam train. How are you this afternoon?
On the line. Where else would I be?
I don't know. Typing, maybe, because somebody was typing. But never mind. Glad to have you.
I'm waiting with bated breath to do today's Israel Report.
Okay, so fantastic. So let's do that. And I think we're definitely going to start it off by talking, what, American elections?
Yes. So let's talk American elections. And we spoke yesterday about, you know, what it means for Israel, who Israelis would go to vote for should Israelis head to the polls. Today's polls had Israelis at about 70% in favor of Trump. But what does it mean for the Palestinians? I know that the Palestinian Authority have been communicating with the Biden-Harris campaign. They favor a Biden administration. They have felt that the Trump administration has been quite biased against them. So let's look at what Kamala Harris, in her communications with the Palestinian Authority, has promised them as part of their foreign policy. So she said that should the Democratic Party be successful, they will back a two-state solution. Now, I don't think that this is different to anything that we've heard from President Trump. I think if we look at the Trump peace plan, if we look at the peace to prosperity, that whole track, we can see they're angling towards a state for the Palestinians, albeit maybe through a different route. What is interesting is the language that we've heard in the deals with the Bahrainis or with the Emiratis and also with the Sudan, not saying, you know, we support a two-state solution, but rather using the language, we support a just and negotiated peace. So that's one issue. The other issue is that they will oppose all annexation, which is also not a far step from the Trump administration. The Trump administration took annexation off the table as we approached the Abraham Accords. The big issue is a promising of the restoration of aid to the Palestinians. Now, this is a concern for Israel because of where the money goes. It doesn't go towards the building of hospitals, improving infrastructure, etc. It goes towards supporting an economy of terror. And if that happens, there will be a lot of objections from Israel if this is not properly monitored. Another possible issue is the reopening of a U.S. consulate for Palestinians in Jerusalem. You know, we cannot forget the infamous moving of the embassy from Tel Aviv to Jerusalem. And I don't think, and we had this early on in the Biden campaign, that they would move the embassy back to Tel Aviv. I don't think that is going to happen. And that would really need the support of Congress, and I don't see that being voted in Congress. So I think everybody who's a bit nervous, you can heave a huge sigh of relief on that. But also a concern for Israel is the promise of working towards reopening the PLO mission in Washington, D.C. This is a massive, massive concern for Israel because of the nature of the rhetoric coming from that mission. So we possibly will only know maybe in about 10 days' time, it's predicted, who is the victor in this election. It is expected to be a pretty tight race. And apparently there are armies of lawyers already waiting to, because if it's contested, this is going to be a big one with a lot of legal wrangling.
Ro, the missing piece of the puzzle that you've just spoken about is the Iran deal. Where does Biden stand on that?
Well, this is a major issue. There has been murmurings that Biden and Harris, they would go back to renegotiating the Iranian deal. And there are some pundits who think that if backed into a corner, Trump might do the same thing. So, you know, that's one of the concerns for some political opinion makers in the state is can Israel rely on President Trump with his stance with Iran, or if he's backed into some kind of corner, will he do an about turn? I think that there's probably a lot of conversation going on with the upper echelons of not just Israeli security establishment, but the region as well, about the threat of Iran. I think that when it comes to talking about the threat of Iran, I don't think Israel's going to be alone necessarily like we were with the Obama campaign, where we would have to push our perspective forward quite hard. We now have regional support. You know, it is a major concern, but we're hoping that Israel is prepared for a possible November 4th, even though we might not hear for a while. Biden victory yesterday, the leader of the opposition, Yair Lapid, said to Netanyahu, you have focused so much on the Republicans that you have neglected your relationship with the Democrats. So let's see what happens. It's certainly going to be an interesting one, that's for sure.
Really, let's call it out for what it is, Islamist terror. It seems to be a daily occurrence in Europe, the latest in Vienna. What's being said in Israel and how are people going to beat this?
Well, this one is quite personal for me. I've got a lot of Witzo Chaverot or Witzo friends who live in Vienna, and I've spent quite a bit of the day talking to some of them to get their perspective. And something that really struck a chord with me was one of them said, you know, for the older generation, this feels like 1934. It has been profoundly traumatic. And what we're not seeing reported so much in the press is that, because it's the last night before curfews go into place because of the corona pandemic, many people were at the opera house, you know, Vienna very famous for that, in the bars, in the cafes, in the restaurants, and they were told to stay there for quite a number of hours before the police could give them the go-ahead to leave. So they found that, you know, quite traumatic, that they were literally under siege. So what we do know is four have been reported dead and at least 17 injured, including a police officer, quite serious. It was a lone wolf attack. The perpetrator who was neutralized, his name is Kushtem Fejzulay. Even though he was born in Vienna, his family came from Albania. He is believed to have been trying to fool the de-radicalization program that the justice system put in place. And he had charges against him before for trying to leave Austria to go to Syria to join ISIS. And one of the issues that, you know, the Viennese have told me today is that they're not prepared for this. You know, they very much understand it's something that happens in France or in Israel, but they weren't prepared for that, and they, you know, they're struggling to come to terms with this. The Viennese authorities, you know, giving out numbers that they can call for support for PTSD. So it has been very, very traumatic on that. And what was initially thought to be anti-Semitic in nature, and Sebastian Kurz, who's the chancellor, has not ruled that out. And just by chance, services in the Great Synagogue had ended 2 hours earlier. So the synagogue was closed, as was the restaurant very close to that. That was closed as well. And my friend saying to me that the windows are very big at this restaurant, and had people been in there, he most certainly would have got a number of casualties there. But at the moment, the Jewish community, even though they don't think it's anti-Semitic in motive, has been told to stay indoors and for the moment remove any outward signs, Kippot, Magen David, etc., to not draw attention to themselves.
Ro, we're going to talk about the Sudanese tomorrow because we're out of time, but I do need to put a question to you because from a listener, and they take preference. Roland says the terror in Europe can be blamed squarely on one person, Angela Merkel. I can tell you she's not my chancellor. She must go. Roland, your thoughts. Is Angela Merkel responsible for what's going on in Europe?
I think to hold one person responsible is not my answer. I think this goes back to decades old policies of immigration and maybe not monitoring enough or not putting counter terror programs in place enough or not monitoring the rhetoric that's happening in certain areas enough. But I don't think I would blame it on one leader, because it certainly hasn't been restricted to one country. I think this is a conversation that we can have a lot more in depth and perhaps should have in depth, and maybe look at some of the influences which has led to this rise in this kind of fundamentalism.
Rolene Marks, always a pleasure chatting to you. And it will be so again tomorrow.
The pleasure's all mine. Catch you tomorrow.